Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, October 18th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and even Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. Give it a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it makes me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. More importantly, it just makes the numbers go up. It makes the algorithm do what the algorithm does and allows more people like you, the listener. It makes more people know about it. So let's do that. This podcast is free, and I do it out of the kindness and need to spew my thoughts into the universe. So do that for me if you can. It's not that hard. This is episode 458. I have a super special return guest. You know him, you love him. It's JL Covan, comedian and podcaster from Making Podcasts Great Again and also the Righteous Prick podcast. I'm going to share that conversation that I literally just had with him, with you, in a couple minutes. Going to share that with you in a few right now. I'm sitting here on my couch recording this intro late afternoon on a Sunday. NFL Red Zone on mute. Could I be more American? Red-blooded American? I got to be honest with you. before I started watching Red Zone, I talk about it early on in my conversation with JL. I started watching this show called Grand Army on Netflix. Holy shit, is it good? It's riveting. It's like this show about these teens. It's the setting is Brooklyn. It's at this place called Grand Army High School, which is supposedly the largest high school in Brooklyn. I think it's fictional. And it's about all a certain group of kids and their life. And it's really fucking intense. And I just got locked into it. And it's something. It's good. It kind of reminds me of, I think they filmed this in Toronto. You could hear some people saying a boot a little bit. But for the most part, I think they film it in Toronto. And that's a pretty metropolitan city. And they pull it off. There's diversity and it's good. Kind of reminds me of Skins a little bit. I fuck with it. It's good. I recommend it if you're into that stuff. But it just came out, I think, this past week. So that I've been getting into that. I'm going to probably Patreon folks, you'll get something a little later on in the week. And go over to Patreon if you have not been there yet. It's $3 a month. High quality content over there. I just wanted to say this. I did not formally say anything about it. And I was going to say something about it last week. But I wanted to just publicly send my congratulations to Rod and Karen Morrow from the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. For their Spotify deal, and they're going to be exclusive with Spotify towards the end of this month. I believe it's the 26th. So in a little more than a week, they're going to be exclusive with Spotify. I was already listening to them on Spotify, but that'll be the only way that you can listen. And I'm sure they have the details and guidelines and all that when you listen to their show. But I wanted to congratulate them. Ron and Karen have been really special friends, and they know this. And I think I've said it before, but I just wanted to say it publicly that they've been really just kind of like I call them the Eric and Tammy Taylor of the podcasting community. And I've said it hundreds of times, but and I don't think they would have voted for Trump. Somebody said that on Twitter one day. I don't think that Eric and Tammy would vote for Trump, even though they live in Texas. And there's a lot of things pointing. If you really watch that series, and I need to revisit, but I don't see them voting for Trump anyway. They're just really kind to me in my career. They've always gave me a place to kind of hang out. And I think they're really special because I moved here in 2007. And I want to say I believe that I may have gotten wind of Rod. And it might have been 10 or 11 years ago. Whenever they started the podcast, but I remember hearing Rod on Bomani Jones's show that he used to have on The Score. He used to, and The Score is I think it's still around. It's a Canadian radio station, media, sports media hub, if you will. I don't know. I didn't know I was going to talk about all this, but I did get to know who Rod was from Bomani Jones's show called The Morning Jones, and Rod used to call in, and I remember I would either, if I wasn't able to listen to it live, I would listen to the podcast while I was at work. And I remember one time tweeting, I was like, oh, Rod in Charlotte, that guy is funny, where does he have a Twitter handle? And then Bomani Jones responded and he gave me his handle, and Rod and I just kind of became friends off that. We would talk on Google chat while we were both at work and stuff. And we just would pass the time that way. And we just got to become friends. And then I remember that he had started a podcast, and then I was on a few times, and we just kind of built that relationship with him and also his lovely wife, Karen, who's also a host on the show, and just had formed this relationship. And they gave me a community. Bomani Jones, Rod, and Karen just kind of gave me this community to have when I was alone. Like I didn't have any family or any friends really here in New York when I moved here. I still don't. No, I have some friends. I'm talking to one of them on this episode, but they really gave me a community of a lot of really cool people that I interact with on social media is because of Rod and Karen, and also Bomani Jones. And where you can kind of feel alone when you're in a new city and you don't have friends. There were people that I hung out with before I started doing comedy. They're not bad people. They're nice people, but we just didn't have the same interest and didn't have the same beliefs when it came to certain things. And I just didn't get down the way that some of them got down. And it just kind of, when you're 27, 28 and you're an adult and you're setting your ways to a certain degree where you're like, I don't want to do this shit. I'm too old for this. Or this shit just isn't me. They gave me a place, and it made me feel like I wasn't like weird, or, you know, I didn't have to feel bad because I had people that thought I was cool online, I guess. And people thought that I was funny doing their podcast, and people that still follow me to this day that, you know, I know. So they gave me a space for that. And then another thing, like I talk about this a lot on the show, is like when you're chasing certain things in your career, and you think that they're important, and they are important to a certain degree, but they're not that important. I've mentioned this a bunch on the show, where Just for Laughs, the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal is like a big deal for up and coming comics. It's the largest comedy festival in the world. And there used to be a time where it could make or break your career. And that was a big achievement that some of my friends and colleagues have done. And I remember just chasing that, auditioning for it, and never working out the way I thought it should have. I never booked the festival. And 2 years ago, I had the pleasure of doing Rod and Karen's first live show in Charlotte, and they asked me to do that. And that was a big deal, and it was very humbling to get to do that. And they provided an opportunity for me to showcase what I could do, or just, you know, just to do stand up. And It was an awesome experience, and I'll never forget that. And just Rod and Karen are great people, and it's really humbling to have had that experience where they chose me out of all the people that they knew, and to have me open their show and to be a part of their very first. And there'll be more, but I was first, okay, you motherfuckers. It was something that I'll just never forget, and I wanted to thank them on. And I probably said something about it a couple years ago after it happened, but they're really good people, and the show has just, the Black Guy Who Tips is just, you know, they're two people that inspired me to do what I do within the podcasting community. And I'm sure they've done that for a lot of other people. And I just wanted to thank them for that publicly. And that they don't know, sometimes people don't know the impact that they have on you. Like, I look at that shit, like doing that show, as a career milestone. You know, that's like one of those, like, I don't know, a notch that you put in your belt, or like just an achievement that they made me feel wanted, and they made me feel special when I was looking, you know, I think part of me, if I be on it, quite honest, yeah, I was looking for approval from showbiz as an entity, showbiz as, you know, like, pick me for this, like chasing it really hard. It's like chasing a girl that really doesn't want you, but you go to the dance with the people that got you there. You know, how do you say that in sports? You go with the girl that, this girl got me to the dance, so I'm dancing with, I don't know. But I'm very happy for Rod and Karen, and I hope that there's more to come. That's this is after 10 plus years of them doing a podcast. I feel like this is only the beginning for them, and nothing but the best. So without further ado, I want to get you to JL. JL was supposed to come on last month, and we had to reschedule. And always love having JL on the show. And this is just me and JL shooting the shit, basically. It's just two buddies talking, catching up, having a good time. And I think that's it. I think I'm going to just yield this podcast to my conversation with the very funny and talented JL Covan.
I was going to say, are you watching The Good Lord Bird?
No, not yet. I've heard mixed things. I heard you kind of have to, you have to warm up to it a little bit.
I guess I read the book, so I was prepared for sort of the tone of the show. But I think Ethan Hawke definitely gunning for those mini series, that limited series Emmy.
Oh yeah, you can. That sounds
a very
like
Daniel Plainview kind of performance.
Oh, okay. I was listening. I watched him on Desus and Mero on YouTube, and they were interviewing him, and he seemed to be like really excited about it. So it's definitely some that I'll catch up to. But I feel like all these fucking things are like a homework assignment now.
That was a joke I did on Too Big to Fail, which is like Netflix, and that was back that I recorded that in 2011. And yeah. I was like, doesn't it feel like the lists are becoming like to-do lists instead of just like entertainment? It was like, oh no, I got to get home and finish this. That was like the beginning of streaming.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, I can't, you know, I hear good things about Raised by Wolves on HBO Max. I'm like, I guess I'll get to that in like December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard.
This is so much.
Yeah, it's really hard to really get into some of these things. And there, I just started randomly watching this show called Grand Army on Netflix just like a couple hours ago. And it's riveting. It's like these kids in high school at the biggest high school in New York. And I'm on episode like 3 or 4. And you can't have a teen drama without somebody getting raped. And I'm looking at the aftermath of it. I'm like, holy shit, man. And I'm angry at characters and I'm invested in that. And I'm just like, you fucking these. I've noticed like.
But that's you're saying it's a drama. It's a drama, not a documentary.
Not a documentary. There is a documentary coming out. No, it's actually out on Amazon Prime. I think it's called Time. And I think it has something to do with the prison system, like a guy being locked up for probably something he didn't do. And it's just like, do I want to get emotionally invested in something like that right now? I don't know. You know, but
it's just too much. I have less and less time, and it seems like they're increasing the content exponentially. I mean, there's whole new platforms out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's very ridiculous.
Yeah, and none of the work is going to you or me.
Yeah.
I mean, none of the acting work.
Yeah, no, I get that. I'm just, you know, I'm webcam curling it up.
You are. You are getting your OnlyFans on really hard, dude. I'm happy for you. It's like
it's all good. Like, let me put it to you this way. For the last 5 months, I make a nice salary with my law firm.
Sure.
For the last 5 months, my law firm salary has been the third source of income in terms of money.
Jesus.
Like, I know Cameo, I'm making a killing on. And YouTube, I'm doing I'm making a ton of money on. So it's like, but the problem is all that stuff, I'm like, well, that's great. Like, 2020 is turning out to be a financially very big year for me.
Right.
I still have yet to advance anything. You know, I don't have a manager. I don't have an agent. And you look at things like, all I want to do is tour clubs. And I know that's limited right now. But, like, you know, other people who've emerged at the same time as me, and I'm not just talking about, you know, Queen C, but the other people who have gotten management and gotten like different kinds of opportunities. And I don't know what it is. You know, maybe I got that Hillary Clinton disease where people just don't, something about me people don't like. But yeah, it's weird because I feel like I don't know yet where my stand-up career is going, which is frustrating because you kind of would expect me to have like a killer 2021 lined up or something by now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but it's, I mean, I can't, you know, money is good. There's nothing wrong with making money, but it's like, that's still the way I look at it. The two forms of income I have right now that are big, YouTube and Cameo, those aren't going to be as big for me in 2021. Not even, you know, if I'm lucky, I'll make 20% what I'm making now on those, which is fine because I don't want to be a professional YouTube Cameo person. I want to be a stand-up comic, but it's like I have seen, you know, zero movement and zero growth on that end, which is very frustrating.
I understand that too, but I think at the same time, it's almost like you watching Deadline, for the most part, is people that have already been established pre-pandemic. They're doing stuff and they're making deals and they're going to shoot things for 2022 or whatever the fuck. And you're seeing all these scripts getting sold, and it's people that are kind of already inside of the beast. And you see that, for the most part, that's what you see. And then there's certain breakout people that are getting things. But for the most part, it's like folks that have already been established. They're kind of doing like comics. They're doing shows. They're doing the drive-in shows or they're doing some of these shows on farms. And I don't know how much that's going to keep happening, as things tend to seem to be like they're surging. Like, my dad was basically told me yesterday, don't come home for Thanksgiving in more ways than one. He was basically like, yeah, we got an iPad now, so we can see each other. And so I started like 2 weeks ago just looking at iPhones, because I've been a Droid guy since maybe 2014. And I'm like, I'm going to get an iPhone so I can FaceTime.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I know.
Monster.
Fucking COVID. I'm becoming a lemming because of this fucking pandemic. And so I got to figure out what I'm going to do with that. And it's just, I'm going to buy an exercise bike so I don't fucking die from not like doing cardio and shit. So
just going to do some Peloton classes with some acting buddies.
Well, that's a lot.
No,
I know. If I was making JL Trump money, I would definitely get a Peloton, but I think it's just going to be something that, something on Amazon that I think you buy the thing and then somebody comes in protected, of course, and puts it together for you. Right. I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm putting my, childish desires for a PS5 on hold. So yeah,
that's like one of the things I think I complained about that online, but I was like, oh, I made that joke. I did like an Obama gif of him dropping the mic.
I did see
like,
that.
Said Obama out, 'cause I was like, I don't think I can get, I said PS4 will be my final gaming system. And then it was just the Obama gif. 'Cause I was like, I have games. I haven't played a game in what I got to say since February.
Oh, wow.
I haven't even played like any game.
What was
always like, you know it, like a lot of these games, they're fun, they're immersive. Like I was playing Spider-Man for a while, but
yeah.
Once you stop playing a game like halfway through and then you don't play for 6 months, you don't remember the controls.
No.
It's meant to be sort of a thing where you like play a game each month and you just sort of like put in a little time each day. Like, 'cause you know, you get the controllers become kind of second nature if
yeah.
you're into a game. But once you stop, it's almost like, I don't, I was at a boss. And I'm like, I'm not going to get by this guy. I don't remember the controls.
Yeah, I just finished. I had to pick that back up. I just beat God of War last weekend. And
I saw you posted, I think you posted a screenshot, which I'm assuming was from the end of the game. And it made me very sad because if you recall, I had a streak. This makes me sound like I'm terrible at video games, but I had a streak of 4 games. Batman Arkham Asylum, God of War, and the 2 South Park games, where I got far into all those games. I got the farthest into, I think, South Park and God of War. I was like 80% done.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a glitch, and I couldn't understand why I was getting these glitches, because I thought, am I just shitty at games? But I like redid each one, and there were glitches. The South Park games are like notorious for glitches, and they never repair them. You know, you know how there's those updates where it's like downloading version 1.7.
Yeah.
There were no updates for South Park, and I looked up online, and people were like, yeah, you get glitches here. Sometimes it F's up the game. And with Batman Arkham Asylum, there was a flaw in the game. It wasn't a glitch, but it was like you're in a hospital or a mansion or something, and you have to go rescue 2 groups of people. But if you go the wrong, like to B instead of A, you can't get back to A.
Hmm.
And you're just like you can just like live forever doing nothing because you can't access that point again. And I was like, well, then the game is flawed because you have to, if it's an open world game,
yeah,
you have to direct me to the place I have to go before you give me options.
Yeah.
And I looked that up, and that was like the guides were like, you have to go to A, and I was like, but then it should just take me there. It shouldn't give me the option.
Right.
And then, but God of War was the worst because I love God. I played, you know, all 3 Gods of War on PS3
mm-hmm.
and got this one, and the graphics are amazing. It's super violent and aggressive and awesome. And I get to this one point, and I was like, I was doing the right thing, and it was just a glitch in the game. And I just was like, I'm not spending 4 weeks going back through what I, you know what I mean? Through
yeah.
the game again, just to try. And then if I find out my game is glitched again, I'm going to like put my foot through the TV. So I've had very bad luck with PS4 games, unfortunately.
Yeah, that sucks, man. That almost sounds like your career, that God of War.
Oh, completely. I mean, I am the Kratos of comedy when it comes to my version of Kratos.
I was playing Spider-Man towards the end, and it's like these boss battles. I was playing the DLC, and like you do these like it's just like all this like ground and pound where it's just a shit ton, a wave of bad guys trying to kick your ass, and you're in this big battle
right.
arena, and like that was just a shit. I said, damn, I sure could have used Kratos and Atreus right now. That to me, that to me was like, that combo was like the best I've ever played with. Now, there are a couple guys that were trying to tell me that God of War was better than The Last of Us, And I said, well, you know,
I have Last of Us 2, just to be clear. I have Last of Us 2, but I've not played it yet. So
I want to get to that.
In case you're going
to
do spoils.
No, I'm not going to spoil anything. But I would say that you don't get God of War PS4 without The Last of Us Part 1. Because that NPC element where you have Ellie. Now, granted, it's way more improved with God of War, because Atreus was like the MVP. Like there's a part where you're without him for a while in the game, and it's like, God, I could really use Atreus right now. But it's a great game. I just don't know if
it pulled off the upset. I mean, it beat out Red Dead Redemption 2, which is another game I have that I haven't played, which I was like, it's so fucked up because I was so looking, those are all games that I was really looking forward to. Not just like, oh, cool. It's like, I love The Last of Us. I love Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
And then I haven't even touched those games because I'm just like, if I get 2 hours free time, like, do I watch one of the 19 shows I have to watch, or do I read for an hour? And then it's like, okay, I'm tired, going to bed. So it's just, it's a weird thing to complain about. I don't have enough gaming time, but you know, 6 months without touching a game is a good stretch when you want to.
Yeah, I kind of just reserved them to playing on Saturdays, and I was so I was so obsessed with playing The Last of Us Part 2. I took 2 days off work. I took Friday, the release day off.
Did you tell Rod that you beat that in like a few days?
Yeah, I beat it in 4 days. And I would have beat it sooner if I didn't. I was doing podcasts and stuff like that. And I did like a Zoom. I did that. I did Drunk Black History. So that was hours knocked off where I could have. I did Reese Waters' show. I did Three Guys On. So if I didn't have that, like, I probably would have beat it in about 2 or 3 days in less time. But it's not it's not the way. That's not the way to play that game because it's so stressful. What I would like as a fan of yours and as a fan of that game, I would have liked a Trump video of him playing Tilu 2, because I think there'd be a lot of gems in that one.
I think it's still possible.
Yeah.
But man, do I want to be done with Trump?
I know you do.
I can't begrudge the money, but good God, it's just Trump stuff has, and I do have one at least. Obviously, there's probably going to be material coming through, unless we hit a civil war, and then I'll be like, I'm going to hang this up. It's not funny anymore. But I do have one sketch coming up that I know is going to be awesome, but I kind of want it to go viral, and I'm not going to say what it, but it's like, it'll be out, you know, by within a week or a week and a half.
Okay.
I have no idea if it will. Obviously you can't predict those things, but this one, it's going to be really funny. It's nothing complicated, but I just know that it's going to be really funny. But you know, the Trump comedy stuff, like, stand-up comedians, I feel like I have to kind of specify that, really get it, and no one else seems to get it. Like, I don't like being compared to other people who do, like, cell phone comedy. Like, there's a lot of, and there's one that I really like, but there's a lot of, like, I'm a Christian, I'm a hick, I'm a MAGA person, I do MAGA. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, a lot of these, and I'm like, I guess because it's the easiest thing to do is just like, I'm just going to do like a twangy Southern accent and make some jokes at the expense of those people, which I'm all for. But there's so many people that have emerged in this, and I go, I am like, I don't want to be affiliated with, and I don't care how big Sarah Cooper gets. I'm as a stand-up comic, I'm at, like, it's a totally different class from everybody else that I've seen blow up during this time. Like, they're, half of them aren't stand-up comics. The rest are like kind of like lower level. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I just want to get separated from this already and like weaponize my fan base towards my stand-up career, you know?
Yeah.
And stop the comparison. They're like, you guys are all, it's like, you know, I don't have to get into the big dog. I mean, her Netflix special is going to have like, you know, 25 guest, like A-list Hollywood stars. So it's like, Jesus Christ, you get the Steve Kerr, your own Netflix special. But, you know, like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like great coaching. But I just want out of this. I want, like, I know I got the chops to stand up. I got a seventh album / first special ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I get the reps in and then record. However, you know, if I can get a deal to do something, or if I just have to do what I've always done, which is just self-produce. And at least now I know I'd sell a lot more than I've ever sold because of the fan base. But it's done already. It's like, I feel like I'm now mucking around with people who aren't on my level. And it's like, I don't begrudge any of them. It's just like, let me get to where I want to be, which is crushing stand-up shows. And like, this will be it. Because the whole videos thing is really just a replacement. It's like a stopgap for me. It's not like I don't have years of real comedy content. Not that this isn't real content, but you know what I mean? Like, I have hundreds of real sketches, 6 albums. Like, this is not me going, I don't know what to do, let me do this. It was more like, well, here's a way for me to be creative until I can do what I want to do again.
Yeah.
And instead it's become this cell phone comedy is now like, you know, treated like, I mean, I'm just a fucking bitter douchebag at this point. I apologize.
No, dude, I get it. And I think one of the reasons we're friends, because we're both very talented people, but I think we kind of think along similar lines. I'm just nicer about the way that I say shit, but at the same, like, because one of my friends was telling me, he and I got into an argument, and he was saying, like, you just want everybody to like you. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I said, not everybody likes me. I said, if everybody liked me, I'd be further along. I think a lot of people respect me and what I can do, like, as far as like on stage and stuff like that, or things that I've accomplished, but I don't think everybody likes me. I think that's him projecting on, you know, on his shit, you know. But I look at the people.
Well, I mean, at this point, when people, I've had people write to me on Twitter, and they're probably wondering, why did I get blocked? But when somebody is like, I've gotten to the point where if somebody says, you and so-and-so should do a special together, I'm like, oh, okay, cool, block. like, if I don't, if I can tell from your quote-unquote compliments that you have shitty comedy taste, then you're of no use to me, and you're annoying me. And it's not, I can take compliments, and I can take compliments I don't like, but I've gotten to this point now where it's like, yeah, just stop, like, I'm now concerned about how many dumb fans I have. Do I have a lot of dumb fans, or do I have fans that respect comedy and respect stand-up? Because I've talked about this a lot. There's plenty of people in stand-up I don't like. There's plenty of trends I don't like in stand-up. But it's still very authentic as an art form, even if there's, like, hackery and people I don't like or whatever. But it's like I see people who – stand-up just doesn't get the respect it deserves just by the masses.
Right.
It's, you know, like, I got into a thing with a woman who was like, well, actually, I mean, you know who I'm talking about, but this fan was like, you didn't have to be mean. And by the way, she did stand-up comedy for a while too. And I just blocked her instead of saying what I really wanted to do. And what I really wanted to say was, like, people who don't know stand-up comedy, like, What I hate is I feel like a lot of people are now using stand-up comedy. Like, if you've done 5 shows in 2 years, you like to say you're a stand-up comedian. Because everybody, I deleted this tweet. I never posted it, but I wanted to say, like, stand-up comedy is like the black man of the arts. White people love to say they love it, but don't want to be actually very close to it. And yeah, that's the, because it's like one of these things, like, it makes you sound very authentic. It's like liking jazz. Like, nobody likes jazz. Jazz sucks. But you're like, oh, I'm into, oh, let's go see some jazz. That makes me sound very, like, in hip and, like, kind of like not your kid. Like, I'm into offbeat things. And stand up is becoming one of those things. Like, I love stand up comedy. Do you know who Bill Burr is? No, who's that? Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Bill Burr is like a litmus test for me.
That's true. Yeah.
He's a big ass, big time comic, and he just hosted SNL, for Christ's sake. If you don't know who Bill Burr is, that's not a crime, but you're not really at all into stand-up comedy. You may like Jerry Seinfeld.
Well, a lot of people...
Like, and he's a real stand-up, but, you know.
A lot of people didn't know who... They found out who he was last week. And
right.
And
they didn't like what they saw.
And they didn't like, and they did not like that. And I thought, I was not going to go on Twitter and say, like, if you don't fucking understand. And people know that he's my favorite. My listeners and everybody knows that. But it's just kind of like, I was like, ah, he had a good set. And he had two applause breaks. Because people that were trying to analyze his set, you know, there are a couple people. And I was like, nobody mentioned that he got two applause breaks.
Right.
Nobody mentioned that.
The thing with Burr's set that I thought was, the only thing I would say, I thought it was good, but I feel like his stand-up, just stylistically, is not ideal.
No,
for that spot.
It's not.
Like,
it's not.
A Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart is a much more ideal SNL comedian because he always, and I, you know, this is not meant as a dig, but he has almost like MC energy.
Yes, he does.
In his act. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's stories. It's smiling. It's like a little bit of, it's like the crowd going, who's here to have fun kind of energy to his stand-up. Bill Burr is, once you're two drinks deep and you're fucking pumped up to see your favorite comic and he comes out there just ripping shit to shreds.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily SNL host ideal comedy.
Right.
And so he did what he does. I just think it was a time and place kind of issue, not anything to do with him. But that's a perfect example of like, and I've said this repeatedly and I'm running into it because I've had people tell me, you know, fans of mine, Chrissy Mayer, is a comedian who
I know her
views are quite bizarre to be nice about it. But I think she's funny. And she posted a thing about John Legend and Chrissy Teigen, like that morning where her photos went out about the miscarriage.
Okay.
And her post was, my mom had two miscarriages the old-fashioned way without a photo shoot. And I liked it because I said, I know that's dark. I'm not saying that's a nice joke.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you should say it to Chrissy Teigen's face.
Yeah.
But if we're being objective, I thought that's a very good joke. I kind of chuckled, like, you know, like a kind of laugh.
Yeah.
So I liked it. And a day later, I see in my notification some woman going, this is disgusting. I was wondering why I was seeing it. And I realized it was because J.L. Covan liked it. Ashamed of this joke and disappointed in JL. And in my head, I was like, oh my God, now I'm getting heat for liking a joke.
Yeah.
Now it's not even my own material that some of these progressive heroes are upset with.
Well,
and I think the problem is that comedy, you know, and I can attest to this, the internet has made so many more avenues for money. So you have to sort of take the good with the bad if you want the money. But it's gotten so many people into quote unquote comedy who have never set foot in a comedy club and probably never will, but now think because they like some memes and some lip sync videos and like a quick stand up clip from Seinfeld, but they're like into comedy. Like I'm into comedy.
Right.
And it's like, no, you're not. And then when you're confronted with a real comedian sharing a joke, you're like deeply disturbed. And it's like, that's comedy. Like, it's very bizarre. It's a good and a bad thing, but I don't know which will win out because the money's so good that nobody wants to stop sort of engaging in these platforms, of course. But at the same time, you have a lot of people who are, you know, imposing, I think, their will on an art form that they don't even really give a shit about or like.
Yeah, they don't.
Like, I don't like jazz, but I'm not going to go to a jazz club and like tell you what good jazz is.
Right. Well, I mean, we have since the advent of Twitter and, you know, social media, it's just been like everybody has their say, or they think they do.
Yeah.
And it's that small minority of people that are saying things, and I don't think anybody really gives a shit. They were mad at Bill Burr for a day, and Now they're probably mad. They're mad at Ice Cube. You know, like 4 or 5 days later, they're mad at Ice Cube for, you know, for him being a jackass. So, you know, it is what it is, man. I watched that Steve Byrne movie, the opening act with Jimmy O Yang. It's basically kind of like him, his story, but Jimmy O Yang is just about a young comic getting his first weekend at an improv, and what it's like. It's actually really fucking good, and it made me miss stand up. It's a lot of shit that's making me miss stand up, but just I know what that's like, and it's like, and I know you know what that's like because you've done that shit where you get the weekend, you got a day job that you hate. And you get a weekend. You get a weekend to get away, and you go. You talk about it on your show all the time. Go to Cheesecake Factory, tell some jokes, make some people laugh in a different city that you've never been in before. And it's something about that, man. It's something. It's a magical thing. It's a lot of you do it for very little money, but we do it. You know,
Where is the opening act? Is that like you got to buy? Is that on demand or is it streaming?
It's on demand. I bought it off of iTunes for like $15. And you could rent it, you can buy it or whatever. But it's one that I'll definitely like revisit. But it's just a solid movie. If you're a comic, it's kind of like he put all of his friends in the movie, so it's like tons of comics in the movie. But right. It was this character.
Is it your favorite Asian-led indie since Columbus?
Oh no, it's not that. It's not that. Well, it's not that good. I fucked up with Steve Byrne in real life because I was trying to be a good comic because I'd had this gig. I had this gig where I was headlining in upstate New York, and Steve Byrne wanted me to feature for him in Syracuse. I was like, oh, I already had this gig, so I didn't want to bail on this guy. And everybody, like Randolph reamed me out. A couple other comics reamed me out. And I was like, fuck. And so I never got to work with him again. But he liked me. He liked me at Levity Live. It just so happened that I was emceeing for him. And that Thursday, the episode that I had a guest star role in was not a guest star; it was like a day player role that aired that night. And I said, yeah, I was just on that episode. He's like, oh, cool. And he wasn't like you know, he was just like, oh, that's good, man. He's like, yeah, you had some good stuff. You want to go to Syracuse in a couple weeks? I should have just, you know, said yes and bailed on that gig. But
as Winston Zeddemore said, when someone asks you if you want to open for them, you say yes.
Yeah, I fucked up. I fucked up, man. And now he hates me.
I opened for him in Toledo in 2011.
Okay.
Or 2010. That's amazing that it's that long ago.
Yeah. He was nice.
We saw a movie together.
Yeah. He was cool as shit. Like people said, well, he's kind of a dick, but he was nice to me. But, you know.
Yeah, maybe just when you're big, maybe he's intimidated by big dudes.
I guess. Like, I mean, but he was cool as shit, you know. But
we're both saying he was nice, and other people are like, he's a dick.
Yeah, maybe they're just little guys or something. I don't know. But he was really cool, and showbiz regret. But I thought, but then the same guy that booked me, he was also a comic. He had gotten some show like down the line, and he had to cancel his own like monthly to do the road gig, you know, like to do like the improv or Funny Bone gig. So I was trying to be righteous with my shit, and I ended up just should have fucking took the gig. But my dad was saying like, no, you did the right thing. Don't worry about it. You know, but it's kind of but yeah, that movie definitely made me think. And there's this one character who plays the feature act, who's, oh my God, who's the guy on SNL? Shit, I didn't know I was going to talk about this, but...
like currently on SNL?
Yeah, Moffat, Alex Moffat, and it was...
no way, he's in it?
Yeah,
I love Alex Moffat.
He played the feature act, and it was a fucking pitch-perfect performance that he did, where it's very subtle, and it was just like, this motherfucker, he is... like that's your feature that works all the clubs, works those improvs, and it's just like it's a certain type. And once you see it, you'll be like, yeah, I know that guy. I know that dude. And it's kind of sad, but it's real as fuck. And it's like, God damn, they nailed it. And it's very subtle. And I think you'll have people that are our peers that would try to like shit on this movie, but I think it's a fucking gem. It's a gem, man. One of the better movies I've seen this year. Let's just say I was excited to see it, and it exceeded my expectations, you know. But but yeah, man, I think you know, it's hard for me to tell you this, as you know, I've had disappointment this year too. But it's just, I think it's not
Lehman Trilogy.
Lehman Trilogy, yeah. And it was a dream. That was the dream was there. Like, it was just like, for like coming up in theater, like the goal is to be an equity actor, to join the union and to do regional theater. And I think, I don't know if it was before I booked that part, or I think it might have been the summer before I booked, or fall, I was watching like this play in Connecticut, in Westport, Connecticut. And it was a regional show, and it was just like, God damn, that's the dream. These guys are just in Connecticut. They're not famous. One of the guys, one of the leads was in Fresh. You remember that movie with Samuel L. Jackson?
Yeah, way back.
Yeah, he was a lead kid, and he was in this ensemble play, and it was just like, that's the fucking dream. That's the dream. It's like, I thought that getting on this Broadway production would let me get into these auditions where it's union only, right? People, where you just audition, you put yourself in the mix, and you could be doing a regional play in Minnesota. You do an August Wilson play in Minnesota or mm-hmm. you know, Pittsburgh or something. And that's the dream. And it was like, I was there. I was like on that stage, and it's just like, it got taken away. It was money. I don't know if it's coming back. I think if it does, I don't know. We'll see. But like, that was disappointing. But you know, and to get it the way that I got it, which I would have to tell you off mic, it's nothing bad that I did, but it was just like, once you find certain things out, you're like, oh shit, like I even got it that way. And it's just like, man, like I had to, like, it wasn't, you have
it was
like
originally R. Kelly that was going to play the role.
Yeah. And they said, we're going to pass on that guy. It's too much trouble. But I did get some solace in that, but it's still like, damn, man. And then it's just back to the grind of doing the, doing the TPS reports. I was working till 8:30 on fucking Friday a couple days ago. I was just like, God, it was just like, oh my God. Like, I can't keep doing this. There's got to be something else. And then, like, you know, auditions are coming back. I'm putting myself on tape for stuff. So, you know, it's something. Yeah. Yeah. I'm feeling good about that. But, you know, it's hard. But I'm willing, if people can get their fucking acts together and we get to some type of, it's corny as fuck to say, it's cliche to say it, but some type of normalcy where everybody is back to something that mirrors what was going on pre-pandemic, then we can really go after what we want to do. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. In other words, once you see me on Twitter saying I'm done, I'm quitting comedy, you'll be like, the world is back.
We're back. Because I always gave you shit for saying, you're like, I'm in New Jersey. And I was like, dude, I live in New Jersey. I'm doing stuff.
No, but it was not me being in New Jersey. It was what the move represented. It wasn't that I was like, oh, no, Jersey sucks. It was like, man, I was comfortable in Midtown.
I know.
And it's the combination of, like, I got a job. I'm back to a full-time job. So even that flexibility to keep doing, I can't even keep doing what I was doing which yeah. was failing. But at least I was kind of had the schedule and the hope, and it felt like I was, you know, losing hope. Mm-hmm. Really, and it was more like moving to Jersey was part of that package. It was like we had made a trade, and mm-hmm. it was like Satan gets JL's comedy career, and JL in return gets a law firm job and a 30-minute commute from Jersey. I was like, man, we got crushed in that trade. That's what it felt like. But the timing couldn't have been better to be in a bigger place, a less condensed place, et cetera.
So. Yeah, and it's a nice area that you're in. I mean, it's good. I mean, you're not, and you're still, and then you kind of look at it now, it's like it's almost a blessing in disguise after what happened, where you're not just in the throes of all that bullshit that's going on. You know, it's, yeah. but it's just, you know, it's, this is just an unprecedented time. And I still think that some people just kind of don't give a shit that we're in the situation that we're in, because people are just, they just want to continue to do what they were doing before all this happened. And I don't fucking get it, man. I don't get it. I'm not passing judgment on them, but it's just like all the shit that I like to do involves a lot of people being around, you know, like it's like going to movies and going to shows, performing on shows. It's just like all the stuff that I really like to do is just like out of the picture right now. And so until that, and then I kind of feel like if I get one of these parts, if I get a part or something on a TV show, I'm going to do it because that's work. Like that's how I earn a living. And that's like mm-hmm. the stuff that I've been doing the last 3 years has been keeping me afloat financially. And like getting some of these residual checks, it's like, holy shit, I need to get some more work. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I need to keep plugging away. And I don't mind being that workhorse that has five or six lines on a TV show doing giving exposition to the story. And it's just like, I don't mind that. If I can keep building and getting better at it, it's like I'm finding myself like memorizing lines a lot easier, being more comfortable on camera, on stage or whatever, like on set. Like I've gotten, you know, used to it and into having more fun on set, where it's just not this rigid thing where it's like, I'm going to do my line, I'm going to do my part, and then that's it. I'm just being I'm a little more free with it. So yeah, man, I don't know, man. And I think you're going to be okay too. I just think, you just have to keep doing what you're doing, and then things will open up. You know, I see people, I've got NFL Red Zone on mute, and people are out at these fucking games, man.
It's so weird, because obviously if none of this had happened, I'd just be like, I'm featuring at Helium in January, and that's my only gig for the next 3 months. Yeah. But on the flip side, Hillary Clinton presidency would have been so much nicer and better.
It would have been. And I think we would probably be in a better, we'd be in a better situation. I bet more people would be at these football games. I think more people
would. Yeah, more people would be alive.
More people would be alive, and more, it would be a lot better. And for the life of me, like it's making me hard to trust people. And there's part of me that still has this this Pollyanna/Anne Frank belief that there's people are still good at heart, where it's, but I just, and I don't want to be any more pessimistic than I already am. You know what I mean? So it's hard, but like, I thought Trump was a joke, man. I thought that shit was just a joke. And I said, well, you know, this guy can't, there's no way. But they just,
well, the sad thing is from Michael Cohen's book, he never wanted to be president.
Right.
Like, I know that's sort of a fear, but he says, he ran wanting to, he needed money. He wanted like to juice up his branding and his business. And the sad thing is, like, Trump is going to lose. He's going to lose really badly. Like, I said that in February. I had friends who were like, no, you don't know that. I'm nervous. And I was like, no. Joe Biden just broke Obama's records in Michigan and Virginia. People like Biden, but more importantly, they truly hate Trump. Like, he is one of our worst people.
Yeah.
And that he is going to get crushed. Maybe not in the Electoral College. I still think he loses, like, decisively in the Electoral College, but he's going to get crushed popular vote, and I think he'll be out of office. But the fact is, he's not going to go anywhere. He's going to be calling into Fox News 3 times a week. He's going to tweet nonstop, and he's going to incite violence and hate. And the thing is, even without Trump, he's going to get like 60 million or 59 million or 61 million votes.
Mm-hmm. Like,
that's crazy. And that's the scary thing.
Right.
That, like, a fifth of this country is like likes him. Like, in other words, to vote for him at this point, you need to be like, you can lie to yourself and say, well, judges, well, you know, face and well, taxes. No. Something in you actually likes this motherfucker.
Yeah.
And that's scary. Like, when people write on my YouTube, they're like, they think it's like they're building a bridge with me. They're like, hey, man, I love Trump, but these are funny. And I'm like, gross.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I see there's this other whack as shit Trump impersonator who blocked me in March when I was growing up. I guess he was just tired of seeing my name blow up. But he's a fucking whack Trump.
Yeah.
And he's doing all these events for, like, hardcore conservative groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, you could never, like, and maybe you're down. Like, but to me, it's like, anybody who's pro-Trump trying to do a Trump impersonation, like, it will automatically suck. Because your heart's not in the right place to do a good satire.
Yeah.
Like, this dude, it's like saying, like, oh, I do a Hitler impersonation, but I'm actually, like, he's not too bad.
He's like, not a bad
that's
guy.
That's going to inform, right, that's going to inform your comedy.
Yeah.
To a point. But, yeah, it's awful. He's so awful. His supporters are just awful. Because it's not even... it's not even a close call. Like, he's a fucking piece of shit, and his supporters, like, are trash. I always love it when it's like, hey, you shouldn't demonize it. And I'm like, no. You suck if you support Trump. It's just a plain, like, there's, you know, Trump to me is like cancer. He's like AIDS. He's like child rape. He's just a thing that you look at and go, you are a fucking abomination and something we need, like, gone.
Yeah.
Like, he's like that. It's like, to me, it's like, there's nobody out there talking about the benefits of cancer. You know what I mean? Like, there's no two sides to cancer.
Right.
People are like, yeah, we gotta get rid of cancer. Cancer is a fucking hate cancer. It took my family member. It took me. There's nobody going, yeah, but you know what? You know what, though? Like, you gotta admit, though, cancer, great for weight loss.
Yeah, it's.
And that's what I hear when somebody says, like, Trump, you got to admit, though, like, deregulation, judges, that's like telling me stage 4 cancer was just what I needed to shed some pounds.
Right. Tell that to Chadwick Boseman, you know?
Yeah. And my friend David, Jesus Christ, David Lee Nelson, who I shared his blog on Twitter, but he was a comedian in New York and an actor.
Oh, yeah, you talked about him. Yes, yeah.
Like, yeah, he was doing theater work in South Carolina, and he wrote a really nice piece that I didn't, you know, I wasn't keeping up on his blog, but we communicated, like, throughout this year, and then I was told by a friend that his you know, he'd taken a downturn. It looked like his health was going well, but he had the same thing. He was 42, colon cancer. Very nice guy, though, good guy, and but he had written something about Chadwick Boseman that was very nice, because it was basically him saying, we're both from South Carolina, we're both actors, we're both going through the same. And then he said, I don't want to make this about me, but that's why it resonated so much. And that's crazy to be like, you know, an actor less than a year apart from, you know, from the same state.
I always liked your Chadwick Boseman joke about him sounding like the Dark Knight, because he's supposed to, he's supposed to sound like Tony Gwynn, but he's like, he's like, I want to end racism.
Wait, didn't you say that on your podcast? I think you made reference to it.
I might have. Yeah, I might have. Because like, because that's the way, because Jackie Robinson played himself in a movie like years, you know, while he was alive, obviously. And he, this, I think it was called like the Jackie Robinson story.
Yeah. Hey guys, I'm actually going to be, I'm actually voting for Nixon. I'm a lifelong Republican because they were the people against, you know, they were on the side of slaves and ex-slaves. I'm voting for Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
That was my comparison of the two.
Yeah, it's, yeah, man, I'm scared still. I'm nervous about it. I was thinking about taking the day, election day off or the day after off, just to, you know, and then shit, it might not be over on the 3rd or the 4th. The way you weigh the ballots are in, but a lot of people are voting early. I don't know what the numbers are pretty high about with people that have voted early, right? Do you have an idea of what the numbers were?
Well, they're definitely higher. The only issue, and I like, I'm sure the only issue with them, I think, is are people voting early? Like, for instance, I voted early, but that's not because I'm not a, you know, that's not because I wouldn't have voted. Mm-hmm. That's just how they're telling us to vote.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I did like a drop-off ballot. So I think it's a combination of more people voting, but also the numbers may be tipped heavier because so many people are aware that they don't want to go to the ballots on election day. So you might have a lot of regular voters just changing the way they vote.
Yeah.
Instead of it being like new voters. But no, I think the numbers are definitely up, and I hope they stay up.
Yeah, because I voted about a week ago. I got my ballot, and I just did it the next day. I was like, I gotta get this shit taken care of. That was the first time I did the mail-in type thing, but I dropped it off in
you mail it or you drop it off
the drop-off box thing, whatever you call it.
Yeah, I trust that better. It's not that I think anything's gonna happen with the mail in Jersey. It's not like we're in a state.
Right.
That would try to fuck us over. But I've lost nothing in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't lost anything in the mail here, but I have had things not get to me. So everything I send out has gotten where it's going, but there have been things that have not gotten to me, including actually my first primary ballot didn't get to me.
Mm.
So I had to request a second one. So that's enough to scare me off of sending my vote in the mail, as if I didn't receive my first ballot.
Yeah, it's just about the civic duty, man. Like I've said it on the show before, I literally would go into the ballot box with the booth with my dad when I was a kid. We would I'd stand in line with him, and you know that's what I grew up with. That you have to vote, like it's your civic duty, just like. I believe wearing a mask is a civic duty in these times that, you know, trying to do my part, you know, in the best way that I can. But it's disheartening and fascinating at the same time how it all became politicized, you know?
Yeah. And it is, whenever I hear that, I always think it's so weak when people, I'm not saying you're doing this, but when people say, it's just the politics, because you're like letting it slide, who really is at fault? And it's like, it's not really politics, it's Republicans and Trump.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
I'm not
yeah.
saying you're saying it, but like, people will go, hey man, just let's leave politics out of it. It's like, politics, like, like I've said before, Donald Trump is right and wrong. This dude ain't politics.
Right.
This is either good or bad. Like, we're not talking about his philosophy on taxation or his stance on pro-life. this dude is a just total horrible self-motivated piece of shit. Mm-hmm. But he's not smart or capable enough to like use his motivation to actually enact good things and to be successful.
Right.
Because it's like I've said to people, I was like, you can have two types of people in the White House. You hope for both, but you can have somebody who's very caring and a very decent person, maybe a Jimmy Carter or something who maybe isn't the greatest at the job, although Jimmy Carter is extremely smart.
Mm-hmm.
But you either can have somebody very caring who can do the right thing because they're motivated to do the right thing, or you can have somebody who's so sharp and skilled that even if they're not a good person, they know how to get things done and can be an efficient, effective leader.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have people who can do both. I think, you know, like you could say Barack Obama, maybe Bill Clinton are like caring people with also, I'd say Bill Clinton is a better politician. Obama kind of came in, got some school of hard knocks lessons in politics.
Yeah.
From, you know, Hillary Clinton, as an example, would not have trusted the Republicans ever for anything for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have neither, you get Trump. You get somebody who is a piece of shit, but who's also not like good at the job. Like, I love it when people say, oh, he's got his list of judges. That's hilarious to me. Barack Obama was reading judicial opinions of the people he was considering.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, he's obviously was a constitutional law professor, but he's like reading opinions, weighing their philosophies, seeing who he thinks would make the best choice, not only, you know, demographically, philosophically, experience. Like, he's really getting into it to make sure he's making good choices with, you know, Sotomayor and Kagan. Whereas Trump just gets a list, and then he just kind of interviews people on that list, and whoever he likes in the interview, that's it. That's how the president, this president, is picking judges. And it's when you look at the people we've had in office, the last Republican president that had real experience and I think brains was H.W. Bush, whether mm-hmm. you agreed with him or not.
Yeah.
That was a guy with experience at every level of
government. He was in the system.
Yale guy, a smart guy.
Yeah.
And when you get Clinton, I'm saying of the Republicans, like
sure.
on that side, that you look at the people we've put up. Bill Clinton, Rhodes Scholar, brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Al Gore, brilliant dude, super experienced,
yeah.
super forward looking. He loses to a fake shit kicker from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
2004, John Kerry, you know, a war hero and I believe a Harvard man.
Yeah.
2008, Barack Obama. 2016, Hillary Clinton. We're always putting up elite level, like Joe Biden. Yes, maybe this is a good thing, but Joe Biden's the first. Even though he's a 40 years in government guy.
Right.
So even though he doesn't have the super academic credentials, he does have superb government experience.
He's a
and
system guy.
The guys the Republicans put up are always like, it's always like, yeah, the people they've elected, I should say, the people they've elected since 2000 have been like, eh, and then Trump.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans fucking go in on, they go all in. They put all their chips in when they back somebody.
Mitt Romney actually was somebody with good credentials and good experience, but he didn't win.
Right, he didn't win.
They like showboats, it seems. They talk about values, but, you know, they're less likely to win. I think the future of the Republican Party, you're going to see a lot of bombastic, like flamboyant people getting nominated. It seems that, you know, when you nominate a normal person, they lose.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, when we nominate somebody with charisma, when the Democrats nominate somebody with charisma, flair, telegenic, they also have the credentials. Bill Clinton and Barack Obama were very popular sort of pop culture figures, but they're also brilliant dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when the Republicans do it, they're like, look, George Bush is like a fake cowboy, and Donald Trump is a big, big, loud businessman.
Yeah. Failed businessman.
I have a vision of Don Jr. running. I almost posted this as a joke, but Don Jr. running for announcing he's running in 2024, and then Donald Trump doesn't endorse him. He endorses somebody else, and then Don Jr. like smothers him with a pillow, and that's how the Trump family ends.
Do you have Apple TV Plus or whatever?
the girlfriend has like an Apple device, so we're trying to. The only two things right now that I want to watch. Oh, you there's a what documentary? You said you loved the documentary on Apple TV. Right?
Boy State. I want you to watch that, and I want you to come back on and.
Okay.
I want you to see that because
yeah, there's a couple things on that. I want to watch that. I want to watch The Morning Show, and I think just because it's a Tom Hanks movie,
Morning Show is good.
I didn't hear much about it.
The Greyhound.
So it was. And what did you see? Greyhound.
I didn't. I just started paying for it, and it came up on my smart.
Oh, okay.
It came up from my smart TV, like my LG. Like I have an LG smart TV, and the app just came up, and I was like, "Oh shit!" So I can watch. I don't have to watch this shit on my laptop. So I just started using that. But Boy State to me, that's one of the best films I've seen this year, and. It's I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's kind of one of those things that kind of it gives you hope in the future for the future. But then it's like it's kind of like then it's just kind of like, fuck, you know, like it's very interesting because a lot of times people say this a lot. We're in the death throes of racism dying and white supremacy is on the verge of dying and all these old people, these old racists got to die out. And then it's like, really? Is it dying out? And then you just kind of watch something like Boy State and it's just like, we're kind of there, but we're not, you know, it's a fascinating watch and it's very surprising too, but I'm not going to say anything more about it, but I definitely want to know what you think about it. Cause I can't sell Jeff Cerulli on it. Cause he thinks all those kids are assholes. But he, you know, he's a document.
Whoa, a rift. This is like Marlo and Avon on Indie Film Corner.
I know, man. He's a documentarian, you know, and that's his bag, but it's like, dude, there's more to it than meets the eye, and it was very I kind of got emotional on during one scene, a couple scenes. I would say that I did, and it was very surprising, that I did, and I welcome that, you know, anytime I'm moved in that way by media, it's like it's always great. I just kind of find it hard to have faith in this country when it comes to a lot of these things. I mean, and like, even when you know, you had the Breonna Taylor decision a month ago where that was like, yeah. Well, this guy, and you can speak to it with more experience because you were worked for the DA, right?
Yeah,
and it's like, well, this guy is working for the state, and he probably wants to be governor one day. Probably wants to be president. You know, he probably has aspirations higher than the position that he's in. So, I don't see why that decision. And he doesn't have any facial hair. He doesn't have a mustache or a beard. So, can't trust a black guy without any facial hair. I'm hoping that you're right. I'm hoping that it's just trounced.
It's what I hope. And the problem I think we have is that everybody's up right now. Okay, we got to get Trump out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Ice Cube, who's going to, you know,
yeah,
wants to hold the vote hostage. He just woke up and, you know, but anyway.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but like, for instance, midterms.
Mm-hmm.
Midterms almost always swing back to the party and against the party in power.
Right.
But for me, what Joe Biden has to do, Joe Biden and his team, they have to set in, and this is why I always wanted Stacey Abrams to be his VP, because mm-hmm. she's been so dedicated to election and voter issues
mm-hmm.
that, and I think it was also Elizabeth Warren who might have said her first thing in office would have been like an election reform package, so that the first thing you do is expand democracy, make voting easier, make Election Day a holiday, all these things to make voting easier, because the easier voting is, it tilts towards Democrats. So as long, if you can stop a lot of restrictive voting things and expand the vote and encourage voting and make it easier to vote, that's the irony. This is like, that shouldn't be partisan.
Right.
Because you're not telling who should vote, but Republicans are fully aware, oh no, if more people vote,
we'll get our ass kicked.
We lose.
Yeah.
And then so be it. The
right.
whole funny thing is like, then get better ideas, get better people, be less extreme.
Mm-hmm.
That's the answer. The answer shouldn't be let's get fewer people voting. So the first thing he's got to do, I think, is election reform stuff. Then I would like him, I'm sure he'll work on healthcare too, but I'd like climate change to be the big thing. If you know, I want climate change to be his Obamacare, the thing he spends the most capital on. But election reforms, I don't think will require as much political capital. Just fucking get that shit done.
Do you think he'll put your boy in his cabinet?
I'm curious because I feel like Inslee is running for governor again,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to win. And I don't know if I think Inslee is the type who I think is loves. Washington, like, loves the state of Washington. Like, I think he loves being governor and would only want to leave
mm-hmm.
for the presidency.
Mm.
So I'm not exactly sure. But you know what? If they wanted to gain EPA or Interior, I'm sure he'd think about it.
Yeah.
But it is important that we have good people in the states as well.
Yeah.
But this is, I just hope that by 2022, if Trump is out, that, you know, people have to stay motivated. Like, this is one of those, everybody talks about never forget.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll make a joke out of this, or like maybe a t-shirt or some shit. Never forget Donald Trump was president. Like,
right.
That shit is 9/11 level to me, if not
yeah.
worse.
Right.
9/11's scarier. Don't get me wrong. 9/11 will always be maybe the scariest thing any of us lived through.
Mm-hmm.
But more damage by an exponential amount has been done by Donald Trump. And if we always say never forget, never forget, like we honor every 9/11, then like every year, every election day from here on out should be, don't forget Donald Trump was president, so get out there and vote.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's that level. I think he's that level of atrocious and that biggest stain on the history of this country that I think I'm going to jot that down. Actually, every
okay.
election day should just be like, never forget Donald Trump.
Yeah. I mean, I think you got something there.
Yeah. Stay motivated. You know, people will be like, oh, we got Trump out of here. Good. Done.
Yeah.
We need to have that LeBron attitude or a Kobe attitude or a Jordan attitude, which is like every year is a challenge. You don't quit when you win that first title.
Right.
You then try to get the second title. Then you try to chase history. It has to be that kind of mentality, because if you slip up, and I think Biden articulated this well, whether or not it was written for him or, but he said, hate doesn't go away. Like, it can be given oxygen. It can be given space.
Yeah.
So you have to actively fight it. You have to actively stop it. You have to actively grow and encourage the good parts of society. You can't just expect it to be gone, because there will be a vacuum and somebody like Trump will fill it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On a lighter note, what are your, a couple of things and we'll wrap this up. What's your family think about your success, your camera boy, OnlyFans success?
Hugely unimpressed. I can tell you that the only person more unhappy with certain people getting Netflix specials and me getting completely ignored by the industry is my mom.
Sure.
But that said, when I told my brother, even after all my success and the fact that all his friends were sending him my stuff and that I had gained a certain level of notoriety,
yeah,
when I told him I had hired a publicist, he like basically rolled his eyes. And I was like, you do know now that I'm making good money. Like, this is a real opportunity. This isn't just me going, I think something might happen. Like, something is happening. So he kind of rolled his eyes at that. And my mom, as you know, like, my uncle passed away last month.
Right.
And that's sort of been dominating everything. But I feel like my mom was excited early on, and now she's just kind of like, you need to lose weight and find something to be happy about.
Sounds like my mom. Yeah. Well, see, we're the same. We're the same guy. Yeah.
So, I'm trying to find happiness on my terms, Chris, not through other people's validation.
Sure.
So for me, I'm kidding. But all I really want is, there's always going to be goals and there's always going to be things to strive for.
Right.
But I would just, and I think I've said this on my podcast, I just want in 2021, I keep hoping, God, it would be so nice to have a special and or a tour.
Yeah.
One or the other or both, but just real career milestones, not just personal. I've put out an album and I'm proud of it. And like, good, my few fans and friends know that I'm putting in work. Like, I want that next level.
Yeah.
And I'm ready, and I think I'm in place for it, but until that happens, and then I'm sure I'll find some other goal to look for, but that's some real, that's the first ring. You know what I mean? That's getting your championship ring.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you quit. But
right.
Now forever you're like, I did it. This, you make new goals, but there's no bigger goal. Because
right.
You can just go for more money or a bigger special or a bigger tour. But if you get a legitimate special and a legit tour, even if it's just one, hopefully not, that's like getting a championship ring. Like, forever, your career choice, your sacrifices, they're always going to be valid in my mind, but they are then cemented Hall of Fame validation, not just, I did my thing and I'm proud of it. It's like, well, now I don't even have to say that. It's like, clearly my choices and my career reached a milestone, reached a significant, easily recognizable milestone by everybody.
Yeah, I think it seems like all of your goals, and I think mine in a lot of ways too. It's just like the goals. Like, I want to do the work. Like, it's not necessary. You want the opportunity to do the work, and I think. And I find myself saying, like, yeah, these things that have happened to me, like a lot of the things that I wanted to do when I was a kid, I've done them already, but not on the level that I want to do them. But everything that I've done, it's like, well, I want more of that. Like, I keep going back to my dad. You know, I remember one day, like, I worked overtime. I think I was doing like an episode of High Maintenance, and we worked for, it was like a 14-hour day or something, and it was one of these shows, and my dad was like, oh man, that was a long day. I guess it's not like what you thought it was like was gonna be like. And I said no, I was like, it's a lot better.
Right.
It's a lot better being on set and just you're waiting around. You get a book or something to read, and you just, when they call you, you do what you're supposed to do. But no, I love it. Like, I love this gig. Like, I love showbiz. You know, like, that's like, even though people, like, I was telling Luisa Diaz last week, I was like, people, you know, shit on SNL, and it, some days are some shows are better than others, but it was good to see that shit back. It was good to see Chris Rock come out on stage. It was great to see Bill Burr come out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's something that I never want to lose, like my love of showbiz. Like, I don't want to lose that. And it's been times where it could have been lost. But I think it's just, you know, it's just like, keep fighting and keep plugging away and all that shit. It's like, part of it's not quitting too. Like, that's part of it too. And it's just, you know, I think things will get back to a form of normalcy when it happens, whatever. But one thing I have to give you props on, I want to know what you thought about the bubble, but then I wanted to give you props on the podcast and just your Trump impression in general. We talked a little bit about it, like maybe last year when you were on at some point. But the one thing I've been noticing, like I binged on the show like about a month or two ago, and I think it was like you kind of hit like a level where it got to where it was, the shit was so funny that you couldn't help. You broke a couple times. I think it was like the Epstein episode. Like it was like you were like when he, it's so fucked up because he died. And then
I'll tell you the biggest laugh was the episode where there was a judge. Mm-hmm. Who, I mean, this is the dark shit on the show, but the judge in Jersey, who the men's rights activist Roy Den Hollander,
mm-hmm,
tried to kill her, but he killed her son,
right,
and then killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
So in an episode where John Lewis had just passed away and Roy Den Hollander had just killed himself, Trump, in what really, as absurd as it is it really that different from what Trump does? He was just praising QAnon for being anti-pedophilia.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's not really crazy when you realize I'm praising a men's rights activist who killed himself and an innocent child.
Yeah.
And saying, you know, John Lewis stood for civil rights, Roy Den Hollander stood for men's rights, and Jeff Epstein, my great friend Jeff Epstein, stood for minority rights, which of course is the combination of minors and titties. That's where the word minorities comes from. And that episode, I've never broken so hard because it was so obscene and so absurd that I was really losing at that episode because it was like what I was suggesting was so heinous.
Yeah.
But also hilarious to me. And it's not one of those things. This is one of those things people have to understand. When you're trying to parody Donald Trump, one of the worst people on earth, the parody will offend because he's already offensive.
Right.
But in real life, Donald Trump in real life wants to have sex with his daughter, has raped women, and praises QAnon for being anti-pedophilia. So to parody that, I took it to praising a murder-suicide guy,
mm-hmm,
which is only it's only like one step from reality. And yeah, I've broken up on a few, but that was the one that I think we really lost it.
That was the first time I noticed, but then like one where I did it with you, I think we were recapping the Oscars or something. And you had that joke.
Yeah. I was so proud of the laugh I got out of you for that when I said, you said, what movies make you cry? And I said, 12 Years a Slave, because the work never got done.
Do you just let that filter go when you're doing him? You're just saying, you're just like, because sometimes as a comic, I feel like I there's a filter that kind of goes down, but then there's still one up. But when you're doing this character, do you just take that governor off and just say whatever happens, happens?
Yeah, I can tell you there was, because that's about as extreme as I've gone, was the praise of a guy who had just killed somebody, mm-hmm, as Trump. And in my head, I start to sort of doubt it a little bit, like my conscience creeps in, and I just go with the flow, and if sometimes there have been times where I've held off. But for instance, this week, you know, I delivered a eulogy of John McCain's 108-year-old mother, where I was like,
"Yeah."
Jay, the host, was like, "Oh, can we have a moment of silence?" And I just spent a minute talking louder because I said, "This is the opposite of a moment of silence. The McCains get extra loud talking instead of silence."
Yeah,
and you know, she was at least tougher than her loser son, but there's really nowhere, like, for instance, here, let me give you a clue as to what potentially my next Trump video is.
Okay.
Trump watching cuties on Netflix.
Oh, God. Have you seen that one?
No.
I still haven't seen it.
I'm going to do Trump reacts to cuties. And just to give your listeners and you a preview, what it basically will be is Trump looking horrified and going, this is what they're putting on Netflix. This is a total disgrace. And then when you realize he's upset because Jeff Epstein isn't alive to see his dream come true.
Oh, my God.
Like, he's not upset about the content of the film or the controversy. He's just sad that his pedophile friend,
didn't get to see Moses,
couldn't see the promised land.
Shit. Did somebody do that picture of Epstein all over Trump's shoulder because of the podcast?
Oh my God. I thanked the person and gave them credit the first time I shared it.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if it was that person's original photo, like if they did it or if they just found it.
Okay.
That shit was hilarious.
Damn. I was looking at that shit like, wow, man. Holy shit.
On the podcast, I'm always talking about how Fred Trump and Jeff Epstein are looking down on me from heaven.
Yeah.
And so it's a total farce, but it's, you know, it's, I feel like it's my duty as a comedian and also as the impersonator, like, you know, it's not for everybody. And that's my whole thing with comedy. I always say to people now, I'm not telling you to like my comedy. Like, if you don't like it, if you have sensitive tastes or you like your comedy more clean,
yeah,
that's totally okay.
Right.
Like, I'm not, there are comics out there that are like, what, do you like fucking Seinfeld, you dumb cunt? Fuck you.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's okay if somebody likes that comedy.
Right.
It's the idea of, like, when you tell me, though, that's not funny, you shouldn't do that. It's like, well, no, now you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're okay not to like it. But this idea of, like, all of a sudden, your tastes dictate what is acceptable as comedy is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's too many people who sort of conflate, I don't like that, with that's not allowed.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, those are two very different things. I respect everyone's right to have their own opinion. I don't want, if I'm doing something wrong, if like I have 100% approval rating on my comedy,
yeah,
the way I do it.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm never going to have, and that's okay. But I want the 82% who really like me to really like me. But nobody, you don't have to like, you can like whatever you want, but there's too much. I feel like there's too much from a certain segment of the critical population that, like, they take it and say, I didn't like that because it was crude. Therefore, you shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a totally ridiculous leap, but it seems to happen more and more. Like, when I post jokes sometimes, and, you know, you get the delete this. And it's like, who are you?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just like,
what?
It's like, oh, that's not for me. Just say, okay, and don't say shit. You don't have to say anything. But then, like,
a person made a comment, like, they love my Trump stuff, and they checked out my stand-up, and they said, you know, in a comment, I said, I was talking to somebody else, and they were like, I was like, yeah, my stand-up can be a little rough, so, you know, no guarantees you'll like it, but check it out. And someone else said, yes, I do love your sense of humor, although some of your stand-up was a little too much for me. Now, I'm not going to respond to that and go, well, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah.
Like, no. I'm like, oh, no, well, thanks for being honest, and thanks for sharing your opinion in a way that's helpful, as opposed to you may be funny at Trump, but your stand-up is terrible.
It leaves something to be desired, and it's laughs. No, that's a thing. Like, I just kind of came to the realization, things crystallized for me a couple weeks ago when I had Gabe Pacheco on a couple weeks ago, and I listened to his album, and we were talking about his chunk that he had about ICE, and I was saying, like, that to me, like, that bit is like, that's when it comes to me, that's being edgy, where you say something that it's a bitter pill to swallow, but it's a pill that you need to take anyway. And you fashion the joke in a way to try to make it as palatable as you can. And you say it, you do it anyway, even though it might be difficult. Not just saying cunt faggot, pussy, and nigger. Like, that's, to me, is not comedy. Like, that's just, like, you're just being crass because you have freedom of speech and there's no skill involved. And I think that's where...
Although that, exact phrase is my safe word in bed.
There you go. Well, that's fine. That's, you know, I didn't need to know that, but I appreciate you feeling safe enough to tell me that. And we've been friends for a long time, so that's fine.
Yeah, if you hear those four words in a row from me, you know something's that I'm in trouble.
But that's the thing, like, and it's like with Bill Burr's set last week, where it was just like, no, he said gay pride. He didn't say anything bad about gay people. But he didn't say, you know, he just, because you even breach the subject, you even bring something up. He's homophobic. No, you just heard something and you thought that he said something bad about gay people. It's just like I had a time like a couple years ago doing Phoebe Robinson's show, and it just got me. It just made me angry. It was like in at the fucking where was it at? It was at Union Hall, like a cool, hip place. And I'm doing material that would eventually end up on my little EP that I put out. And clubs everywhere, different places, all around the country, I've done that material. And they were like, oh, and it's like, I'm not even being edgy. Like, you're not even, like, you just hear a certain thing, and then you want to have an issue about it. It's like, I don't know. And you kind of get to the point where, you know, do I even want to do comedy for people anymore to a certain degree? Right. Obviously, I want to. There's stuff that I want to. There's still things that I want to talk about. But it's like, Jesus Christ, like, do you just want to see? I'm not even going to say. But it's just like it's just really, that was something that just kind of blossomed for me, where it was like, oh, no, well, that what I do is try to make uncomfortable things funny, things that I feel like that are funny about uncomfortable things. Like, you know, I try to talk about that shit, you know, and not trying to. And to me, that's the fun in it. That's where the fun lies, where it's like trying to make these uncomfortable things funny, trying to get that over, not necessarily make people feel bad. Like, my goal, that's not my goal. And it's like, I find that the people that are like that, well, you just don't fucking get this. It's just like, no, dude, that's not the point. And that's why you're a fucking hack for people that are like that. It's not there. I think there is a right way and a wrong way to do this shit. But I don't know. Then my last thing, what are your thoughts on the bubble and LeBron James's legacy? How the NBA handled the bubble.
I've been firmly in the LeBron James is the GOAT camp for a little while.
Yeah.
And I think what this did, the few things, I will admit, I didn't watch anything until the finals.
Okay.
After the Jazz were eliminated, because there's always, I need that one, at least one series to get over the loss of my team.
Sure.
One round, I should say. So I always skip around. I'm always like, I can't watch any more basketball. And then just like everything else, I just lost track of time and was like, all right, sports, damn. And so I ended up just watching some of the finals. I think the NBA did a phenomenal job with the bubble, because I never thought turning on that it was like anything less than good ass playoff basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, I never was like, this is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And credit to the players too. Not that they need the crowd, but you know, it just was a lot of high level basketball, very intense. It didn't feel like it was missing anything from my perspective.
Right.
So they did a great job with that. And I think LeBron is, and I was impressed, you know, Anthony Davis, you know, guarding Jimmy Butler and stuff like that. Like, obviously I kind of don't hope, you know, I still have hope that the Jazz can get some sort of sneaky title in the next couple of years. But, you know, like the Miami Heat almost got this year. I'd like the Jazz to get that kind of sneaky opportunity soon, but who knows if that'll ever happen. But Davis, you know, Davis and Jimmy Butler acquitted themselves extremely well in the playoffs. And I think, you know, Anthony Davis, the only thing that will come up for him now is if he wins another title with LeBron, he'll still be young enough that then people will be doing the, but can he win one on his own as like the solitary lead guy or whatever?
Mm.
Or as the, you know, as the undisputed number one on a team, because he's obviously would be a number one on about 25 teams.
But do you think, but let me ask you this though. I don't think that anybody has gotten scrutinized in the way that LeBron James has. I don't know that I don't know that we see anybody else getting that much scrutiny. Am I wrong?
No, I think the problem, but that's the whole point is that he is that special. Like even Zion and Giannis will get like scrutiny, but they didn't come in with the level of hype and attention that LeBron had.
Right.
And so I don't know who on the horizon could come, you know, even Zion was a viral video high schooler and stuff, but it's just not the same.
Yeah.
And I think maybe there's too much content. Like LeBron got to rise to fame just before social media, when you didn't have 800 viral videos of dudes dunking through their legs. So he rose when we had less things to focus on. Do you know what I mean? Like he was at the end of the sort of Jordan era where it was like you didn't have social media. So it was just like if he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16, that was it.
Yeah.
He's on the cut. Like that the sports world is focused on that. A cover of Sports Illustrated 20 years ago, man, you are the focus of the sports world.
Yeah.
So at 16, he's the chosen one. This isn't in the social media era where it's like, oh, Slam Magazine Online and this and that. I'll check out these videos. Like Zion Williamson is a perfect example. Kind of similar hype, but not nearly the same like dominance and prophecy almost in his career. So LeBron emerges with that. So we all know who he is. He's already kind of a branding icon by the time he's 18. Then he gets into the league, and then his playing career, as he explodes, social media explodes with him. So now he's been the focus. He was the solitary focal point as this young phenom. And now social media just exponentially increases the attention. So he came with a spotlight that most people don't ever have, and many won't because of how diffuse our attention is now. And yet then, with that attention, it became magnified through social media. So I don't know, A, when the next time we'll see somebody with his sort of talent. Like I've always said, like it's almost like Wilt Chamberlain, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. To me, those are the three evolutionary leaps in basketball. And the guys who were like, who could have competed in the next generation and been Hall of Famers, like had physical talents to be like if LeBron was born today, he'd be an NBA All-Star in 20 years. I don't care if everybody walking around looks like Luka and Kristaps Porzingis and Giannis, he'd be an All-Star in 20 years from now if he was a rookie. He's just, because he's ahead of his time. He's not the best in his time. He's almost ahead of his time. Same with Jordan being an All-Star right now. You know, some people say he'd be the best player. But the point being, he was born in 1963.
Yeah.
If he was born in 2003, same guy, same body, same everything, I think he's an NBA All-Star.
Oh, of
and
course.
And Wilt Chamberlain, with his just incredible physical athleticism and size, would have been an All-Star big man in the 90s. Like, just he would have been.
Yeah.
And there was this interview I remember, I cracked up my friends in college with it, but there was an interview, like they always interviewed Bill until Chamberlain passed away. They would do these interviews with Russell and Chamberlain, like they were almost like a buddy cop show where Russell is like the more studious, laughing, seeds the spotlight, and Chamberlain would still be like rocking shades at 60 in an interview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they said, you know, how many points do you think you'd average in today's NBA game? And he said, you know, with Russell sitting there, I'd say about 30. And then he takes a pause and goes, "Oh, you mean if I was young?" And Bill Russell just goes, Bill Russell just loses.
Yeah.
It was one of the funnier, even though it's a little bit like, it's almost like NBA dad humor.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was hilarious because it was like, you know, he kind of thought that. Like, there was like 5%, like, I could get out there right now and get 20.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's 60.
It's just so interesting to me because I feel like LeBron, I can't, I always can call him like kind of like, it's not the best description, but for the sake of the argument, it's like he's the NBA's Ron Howard to a certain degree, where it's like you watched Ron Howard grow up as a kid, even though LeBron was like 16 when he came on the scene. But like, it's like you've seen him win all this stuff and it's like you really didn't have a problem with him. The worst thing that he did to me was when they lost, when Cleveland lost to Orlando and he didn't shake people's hands at the end. Like I don't look at his decision as a big deal. I just think he just went to another team. But I always look at LeBron as like, I don't think these other guys will go through that much scrutiny. It's almost like the Hove did that, so hopefully you wouldn't have to go through that. Like, because LeBron right. James did it, nobody else, like, people will have their scrutiny. You have your Stephen A's talking shit about Kevin Durant and Kyrie, you know, on First Take. Like, you'll get that, but it's not going to be the same. It's like LeBron, like, the goalposts, every time LeBron makes an achievement, the goalposts continues to move. You know, it's just not the same. And these guys, you know, I think they benefit from that. A lot of these guys, like behind him, they will. And Zion is just like, you know, we'll see what happens. I wish nothing but the best for him, but it's just not going to be the same scrutiny. It's not.
Yeah, it's and I feel like Zion, I'm very nervous for Zion's knees.
Yeah.
He just has a weird walk. He has like this wobbly walk, and it's not his fault. He's obviously been blessed with incredible athleticism and strength and size, but like it almost doesn't quite click together.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch him walk, you're like, damn, that's a lot of muscle and explosion on some weird shaped legs, like some weird structured legs.
Is it the weight, do you think? Because everybody's like, he's got to lose weight.
Well, but the thing with him is, I mean, he's on like a new diet, but I think he's just this weird combination of like naturally big. Like he's a thick, naturally, like, I don't think he's just some dude who's like on creatine and weight gain.
No, he's just huge.
You know, like, bulk up. I think he's just a thick dude who also happens to have incredible hops. Like, here's the thing. If Zion Williams could get to 230 pounds, dude have like a 52-inch vertical. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if he could just shed 40 pounds from his frame, imagine how high and explosive he'd be then.
Yeah.
I just don't think he can.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's a nice young team. I want to see. I mean, the thing about me, like with what that I enjoy with the NBA is these young teams that just the upstarts that kind of, you know, Golden State used to be that, you know, and as much as they become the villains of the NBA, like that was with the exception of Kevin Durant coming in there. I remember when Andre Iguodala was the big free agent acquisition. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it was almost like farm team homegrown, and it just got to a point where it's like, oh, these guys aren't fun to play with in 2K anymore. I can't do that. I can't, you know, it's not fun anymore. But yeah, like that. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. They say the season's supposed to start. I heard rumblings that it might start like in January, Martin Luther King Day. So.
Oh, they're going to start in January?
That's what I heard.
MLK Day.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Like, maybe I was watching, like, something on YouTube, like The Jump or First Take or something. They mentioned it. I don't know if that's official yet, though.
I was hoping they'd start it on Christmas, because I think that's almost, even though the season is always going on at Christmas, Christmas is like the day that the NFL seeds to the NBA, where the NBA starts to get good.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, interesting. But I guess we can all watch Soul on Disney Plus.
Dude, we can watch Soul, and we can watch Coming to America Part 2.
Oh, that's right. Who got that? Did Amazon get that?
Amazon got it, yeah. Bezos.
And they got Borat 2 on Friday, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. Oh, let's close with this. What have you liked this year, and what are you looking forward to as far as like film and TV stuff?
It's weird cuz I haven't seen much, and I haven't really liked most of what I have seen.
Did you like your boy Affleck movie? Did you like his movie? The Way Back? Did we talk about that?
No, I really didn't. We didn't talk about it. I didn't think it was horrible. I just thought that I hate it when a sports movie has like unnecessary F-ups, like easily corrected, just little things like where he was. It never felt like a real coaching job. Like he'd just come out of his, he'd show up at his office and they'd be like warming up and it just makes, so you don't have a pregame meeting. You're not there with your team. Like I know you have to do the dramatic thing, and then he walks in. It was, there were little things like that where I was like, it had a. It was like okay, you know what I mean? Like, which is sometimes the worst when you're just like B minus. It wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen, but it was just okay. I did like that hoops court at the end that was like on the ocean. I was like, how do you play there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I teared up a little when I saw it. I saw it in the theater. I teared up. That's one of the last flicks I saw.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was, I waited till it was downgraded from, like, the $20 rental to the $7 rental.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, like, 4 months later, it was on HBO.
Yeah, yeah.
Invisible Man, I thought was overrated. It got really good reviews, and I was like, once again, not bad.
No,
but like 90% Rotten Tomatoes. Get out of here.
Yeah, I like Elizabeth Moss. She sold it as much as she could, but yeah, it was fine. It was just like, all right, but yeah.
I'm trying to think. I had one thing in mind, but obviously, you know, I haven't seen much. I hated the Pickle movie with Seth Rogen. I was stunned at how much I didn't enjoy that on HBO Max.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
American Pickle?
Sure.
Because, like, you know, there's no movie, so if somebody has a new movie with a movie star, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
And, oof, man, I stopped it after, like, it was only like 85 minutes, and I watched an hour, and I was like, I don't care. yeah, I'm trying to think what I've seen. It's just a bunch of little things coming out. I watched this like movie with Bryan Cranston as like a circus guy running like a mall circus on Disney Plus. That was like mildly amusing, but it's really a kids movie.
Oh, I didn't know. I don't know about that.
Ivan or something.
Oh, I don't have Disney Plus. Okay. The Great Ivan.
I'm trying to think. I think I saw. Oh, you know what I watched?
What?
Finally, I watched it and thought it was excellent. The Farewell.
Oh, it's fucking fantastic. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, you no, did but for, like, that was one of those movies I said, okay, and not to make the direct comparison, but I will. When I saw Crazy Rich Asians, the reviews for that were so, like, stellar.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard people say, oh, I love Crazy Rich Asians. And I was like, okay, cool. I hated that movie.
You hated it?
I don't know why. I just thought it was terrible. I legitimately thought it was terrible.
I saw that, but
I'm confused. This wasn't one of those ones where I was like, oh, it's overrated. Like, I called Fleabag overrated, which doesn't mean bad. It just means I don't get why everybody's like nuts for it.
Uh-huh.
I really didn't like Crazy Rich Asians. Not like for personal reasons. I was just like, I don't enjoy this dumbass movie at all.
To me.
And I know that's me or whatever, but like, you know, there's a difference. Usually I tell people, I'm like, I said it was overrated. I didn't say it was bad. I just didn't think it was as good as everybody said. Crazy Rich Asians, I'm like on the other end of the spectrum. I'm like, 91% of Rotten Tomatoes, this shit should have had like a 10 in my book. So when The Farewell came out, I'm only making the comparison because they're Asian. But The reason I make comparisons, I said, oh, is this going to be another one of those movies where it feels like critics are bending over backwards to be like, we're about representation and we're giving a lot of good, like, we want to see that, so we're encouraging it and being positive about it. So I didn't know. I didn't really know what The Farewell was about, but I was like, the reviews are really good. And she won a Golden Globe, I think, Awkwafina.
Yeah.
Won a Golden Globe.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I was bored, and I said, let me watch this. I love that movie.
Oh, that was fucking like, great. Like, no, it was great.
It was so good, and even the ending, which I don't want to, even the ending was like, oh, man, like, you talk about a feat, like, I needed, that was like a great pick-me-up.
Mm-hmm.
That movie.
That was in my top and I got my top list.
Such a pleasant surprise because I was just watching it out of respect of like, well, it's here. It's on Amazon Prime. It got 98% of Rotten Tomatoes. I'm under no obligation to like it, but let me see. Let me see. And I was just so good. So good.
Yeah, that one, that made my top films of 2019 when we did, you know, that was, it was always like Last Black Man, Farewell, Parasite. That was like in the top, you know, the top five. Yeah, that was really good. It was fun because I got to see that one in a room full of Asian people, and they liked it. And at the theater that they charge so much for that is not good. It's not a good theater. That Lincoln Square AMC.
Yeah,
I saw it there, and I actually saw Crazy Rich Asians before your taping in Philly. Yeah, I saw it in South Jersey. I thought it was okay. Like, it was just like a studio rom com, but I didn't hate it as much.
No, I hated that shit. Not because I had anything. It was just like I hated it because I was like, the whole movie, I was like, am I not getting this? Or does this movie suck? Like, everybody's saying it's so good. And I was like, how? Like, what, in what way is it so good would be my question. Like, is the acting so good? Or is the story so good? I just didn't. And when people were, you know, it was one of those every year. My favorite thing is when every Oscars now, when people are like, not one woman director.
Oh, yeah.
And then they, you know, and then they list, by like the fifth name on the list, it's just some chick who directed a shitty movie. You know, it'll be like, they'll name like the three directors who directed like Contenders. You're like, why couldn't they nominate A, B, or C? And you're like, okay, those, you have an argument.
Mm-hmm.
And then they like, but to pile on, like, and what about the woman who directed, you know, the fucking movie that's at 13% on Rotten Tomatoes? What about her?
I'm like, no, dog.
And I was like, well, her movie sucked. That might be why she shouldn't be on this list.
I was biased with Mario Heller for Can You Ever Forgive Me? But I thought that she will get some love eventually. But some stuff was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, they could have put some people. But yeah, like, I mean, I thought The Farewell was fantastic. That could have got some love. But now they have to put these they put those requirements on, you know, like where you have to have people of color and you have to have meet certain criteria in order to be considered for an Oscar. And I saw that trailer for that movie, Hillbilly Elegy. Have you seen that? And I was like, oh, they're going in. They're trying to get.
I know it's based on a book.
Yeah.
And it's coming to Netflix soon. I haven't watched the trailer yet because it just was like freckly white trash, Glenn Close and Amy Adams.
Yeah, Amy Adams. Yeah, she's going. They're going for some trophies in this one, man. It's not like they're really going for it because Amy Adams has no makeup on. Like, it's just like they're trying to get. They like, we need to get this shit in because after that we're gonna have to have like, you know, Asian people and Hispanic people and Black people in the movie. They are going in. It's funny to me because like even I think Rod said this like a year or two ago where it's like they do all these period pieces so they don't have to put no Black people in it or any type of people of color in these movies. So in order for them to be considered, they're going to have to start putting more people in this shit. But I'm going to watch it and I'm going to have a good time.
Let me tell you, my first Hollywood controversy, you watch. It's once I get put in a movie and then a studio claims me as like part of the diversity in the movie. And then people will be like, oh, shit.
Black Twitter's going to be mad at you.
That people call me Frederick Douglass. That'll be my,
he's not really
be my
black.
Hateful questioning of my race name.
Yeah, you're going to have...
That'll be my Talcum X, will be Frederick Douglass.
Oh,
I think
man.
Somebody had a good pun for Thurgood Marshall, and I can't remember what it was.
Thurgood Marshall.
Thurgood Marshmallow? I don't know.
Thurgood Marshall. Man. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what happens with that, because, I mean, people are still filming stuff. I don't know, you know, like what's going to happen with next year, but I know there's some stuff that people got in the can, but this year should be interesting. I think I'm interested in seeing what happens with the Oscars this next year.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
Well, the danger is for like, there's people like us that, you know, even though Dan is trying to get us back into theaters as soon as possible.
Yeah. To kill us.
I think, yeah, I can't wait to go back to theaters. I'm excited to eventually go back to movie theaters, but I feel like they were already suffering from like younger people being like, I just watch on my phone.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now more people will be like, I'd rather just stay home.
Dude,
to me, it feels weird. I feel like more people want to go out. Like,
yeah.
We'll be looking to go to the theater next year. Like, okay, we've been here watching the street. I feel like next year could be like a bad year for Netflix.
We'll
see.
You know
what I mean? In terms of people being like, I'm done with the streaming. Let's go do something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen, man. I want to see. I still love that experience. I watched a couple movies. The Montclair Film Festival is going on right now. And they have they have virtual cinema. I watched a couple movies on that, and then they did some like, because that's not that, I'm not gonna tell people where you live, but they've got like, they did like a drive, some of them are drive-in movies, like the Nomad, mm-hmm. the new Frances McDormand film, and it's pretty neat. So I checked out a couple of those, and I was like, this isn't bad, but I still like that experience on the big screen. And every now and then you get a like popcorn and shit, like where they used to do it at the, I don't know if you know of the, do they have bow ties in the cinema in the city? Bow tie cinema to me.
Yeah, there's one in Hoboken. There's one on 23rd
mm-hmm.
and it might have changed makers. It might have changed, but there was one on 23rd and 8th.
There's one in Montclair also, and that.
Oh sure, is that like closed for good now?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't think it is. I hope it isn't.
But it's still closed.
It might. I don't know if it's open now, but like I used to go there. Montclair Film Festival used to be there. They used to have the films there, and their pop.
That's what I saw before everything closed down. Like, I mean, or late last year, that's where I saw like Waves and Jojo okay. Rabbit.
Okay. Yeah. They have the best popcorn in my opinion. AMC's got nothing on them every now. I like that theater in, they call it Greenberg, but it's still kind of like White Plains. I think you might know it. You might know it's in Westchester and it's in the strip. It's in like a little strip mall. And it's like next to a senior citizen's home, and it's like there's a pizza place there, Chinese place, and it's just like a middle of nowhere, like off, like just like off the beaten path, and it's fucking great. So I hope that those come back when everything's better, because I miss that experience. It's nothing like it, you know. It's cool to watch a movie. A new movie in the comfort. Like I spent all day working till fucking 8. Like I told you early, late on Friday, and I ordered a burrito and I watched that a new fucking movie with the film festival. You know, had a big ass burrito, watched some art house cinema. Well, JL, this has been awesome, dude. Let's plug some stuff, man.
Sure. Sarah Cooper's Netflix special is out in a couple of weeks on Netflix, so tune in.
I know you're going to be watching that shit at 3 a.m. angry as fuck.
No. I don't wish that. Here's the truth. Not that anybody, you know, once they hear me say that, they just tune off and go tweet about it. But I would just say, I hope for all good people to have success. That's what I really believe.
Yeah.
And I hope I get my success. Maybe I'm not a good person. That's also possible. But what I think, I don't know if I will watch it. I don't know if I can. It's like too raw.
Sure. Well,
nothing personal with her, but it's just, it's like, ugh, I feel like I'm watching, you know, I feel like I was the runner up in some like lottery contest and I don't want to see the other person celebrate. I know that sounds petty, but I think you can understand what I'm saying.
I can understand it, dude. I haven't watched Hamilton yet.
Oh, Hamilton's good, man. And it even, as somebody who was there in the orchestra in 2016, in 2015,
I know, dude.
I should say.
Did they talk about that on Knives Out? I saw it at the Public.
Yes, a great subtle line by Don Johnson.
That shit is under, no, people, that's kind of a crowd pleaser. It's not under, yeah.
Get the job done, saw it at the Public. Like, it's a very subtle little line.
Yeah, it's the shit.
And my brother and sister-in-law did see it at the Public Theater.
Yeah, that's a great fucking theater, man. I like that place.
But, for my plugs, you know, making podcasts great again, Righteous PK. If you just go to my website, jlcomedy.com, which is going to be totally rebranded probably at the end of this month. By the end of this month, the new site should be up. But, if you just go there, you can find links to all my social media, my YouTube videos, all that stuff. So just jlcomedy.com and follow me or listen to me wherever you want to.
And before you lay Trump to bed, hopefully next year, the fanboy in me wants to see Trump's thoughts on Ellie and
I think sometime before the end of this year I'll do a I was so proud of that World War II video.
That was fucking great. That's the reason why I won. And I said, oh, I wonder, I just didn't want to be like all those other thousands of fans that are just like, would you fucking do The Last of Us? Because there's so much toxic masculinity and hate towards that game where, you know, you called it. And see, a lot of my friends are just like that have played. Just, oh, I liked it. It was good, you know. But then, like, if you go on YouTube, it's like, why I fucking hated this game. And this is a fucking bullshit.
Oh, geez.
And you had called that game. You were the one that put me on. And you would, and I thought that the trailers were great when I, you know,
I'm the most toxic masculine person.
Exactly. and I was like, because I was like, okay, this game, because I remember when I remember being at the Stress Factory, and it was like before a show. I think it was like before or after a show. And I was like, oh, that game's going to be good. And I just didn't have time to play it. And I remember when it came out, everybody was like, that first 15 minutes, holy shit, The Last of Us, that first 15 minutes. I didn't play it till like November of that year. And then you had raved about it. I was like, okay, I got to get into this. And then fell in love with it. But the rollout for this game, it was unprecedented. We had never been in a pandemic or anything of this nature. We had never witnessed all these delays. There were leaks that came out. And then just people like, it was my first time being involved like as somebody in the YouTube gaming community where all this shit had happened. And I was like, I asked this guy that kind of became a buddy, and I was just like, have you ever seen anything like this? And he was like, nope, never seen any type of release like this. This is nothing. It's never been like this. So it's really fascinating to kind of witness and experience. But everybody else, oh, it was good. It was just like, I liked it. But yeah, dude, like, that's what I want to see. Well, JL, this has been awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
And
good catching up.
Yeah, yes, sir. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. Take it easy.